Hi, everybody. Good to see you. Give everyone a moment to get in. All right. I know I say they're all my favorite, but Myth of Perfection really is one of my favorites. You've heard me already say Myth of Perfection probably 100 times in the last months. So, we're already in it. And I'm really excited to go deeper today. A couple things before we jump in. The first is our class today kind of marks, it's not exactly 2 months left, but we're already 8 months through, if you can believe it. And we've got about 2 months left. And so in some ways it's going to start accelerating. It's going to, in some ways it's going to start feeling quicker for some of us. And then for others of us, this program is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a long ass program. And so it's like sometimes we can lose momentum when we're moving into the home stretch, totally normal. So if that's you, this is a reminder that you can recommit at any moment. You can recommit at any moment. And if you started strong, you can end strong. So just normalizing the marathon, and there are always ebbs and flows, right? In a longer journey, it can't all be sprint and fast and always present and all the things. But make a decision how you want to move through are these last 2 months. I don't even like to say it. I don't want to think it. I'm not ready. Okay, so all that being said, our class today, which is supporting clients through the myth of perfection, is a continuation of our module on just giving you as many tools in your toolbox for supporting clients with obstacles. And our call today, I think, is going to bring together also rewiring techniques and befriend your fear techniques. It'll do a lot of different things. I think you'll really enjoy. All right, all that being said, what is perfectionism? Well, the definition I'm about to give isn't exhaustive, but I think it'll get at it, at least in the way that we're going to be looking at it today and over this next week. So perfectionism can show up as the need to get it totally right. That's one way. The need to get it totally right. Or it can show up as not being happy or settled. And when I say settled, I mean your nervous system not being settled or not being satisfied, unless it's whatever that it is, absolutely perfect. Or another way to get at it is being in fight or flight or fawn or freeze if it's not totally right or as you expected. Or another way to think about it is judging yourself or others harshly if it's not perfect. So just like everything, we were looking at this through negative thought patterns, or really a better title for it is unhelpful thought patterns. And that's what I'm going to say about perfectionism. It's not about that it's good or bad. It's, is it helpful or unhelpful? Is it an obstacle or not an obstacle? My perfectionism can serve me really, really well sometimes. But because I have a strong perfectionist inside of me, it can also be a really big obstacle sometimes. So it goes without saying, but I will just share some ways that perfectionism can become an obstacle, can stop you from actually getting things done, right? If it's not perfect, then you don't ever complete it. My very first website, with my first, my only business partner, Dawn, another Virgo, by the way, so two perfectionists. That first website took us over a year to complete. And the only reason was perfectionism. And we held ourselves back and we held ourselves back from putting it out there because it wasn't perfect. We had to change this little thing and that little thing, et cetera, et cetera. Perfectionism becomes an obstacle when it makes things take much longer than they need to. Perfectionism becomes an obstacle when you get caught up or even obsessed in fixing unnecessary details instead of moving things forward. Perfectionism can become an obstacle for some people. They'll just stop showing up, right? Like I missed three sacred depth classes, and so I just like I can't catch up. I'm just not even gonna show up anymore. Perfectionism can become an obstacle when it robs you of your confidence. I didn't get that exactly right. That session wasn't perfect, and therefore I'm not a good practitioner. Perfection becomes an obstacle when it causes you to self-judge and think not so good things about yourself. Just to normalize all of these things, like so many of them, right? I still work with particularly this self-judgment one. Perfectionism can be an obstacle if it takes you out of your process. So perfectionism can show up in any area of your life. And for some of us, just because we have perfectionist tendencies in one area, it doesn't necessarily show up in all the areas. Like my perfectionist tends to show up mostly in my work. A little bit more also in my parenting, but when it comes to cooking, my perfectionist could care less about that. So it can show up in work, in your creativity, in your relation, any relationship that you have, in your home, in your sex life, in your appearance, in how you move through programs like this, like really in any way. All right, so all that being said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? Racing 12. I'm there too. Yeah, Radha, I'm glad that you're underscoring that because it's not true here. It's not how you do one thing is how you do everything. Yep, except for when we don't. So what are the places or the areas that your perfectionism comes up? And feel free to get as detailed as you want. So detailed meaning maybe not just work in general, but where are the specific places with work where your perfectionism might come up? Hema is saying, I thought I was a recovering perfectionist, but I might still be a 10. Lauren, I'm so glad you've gotten easier on yourself. Simona too. Yeah. So where are the places? Relationships with others. Yeah. And in marketing. Amy Jo has different areas. Simona, that's the second time in 2 days with that particular Spinal Tap reference, which I don't get at all. I mean, I get it, but I don't know it. So down from an 11 to an 8. Okay. Next question to think about. What, and maybe positive and negative, again, aren't the right words here. What's helpful about your perfectionism and what's unhelpful about your perfectionism? What's helpful? Put this in the chat. What's helpful about your perfectionism and what's unhelpful about your perfectionism? I promise you, there are probably things in both of those buckets. Now, Carlita's saying, in some areas, I experience the perfectionism more as a constant state of worry than as a driving force for actions. Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing that into the picture. That is a biggie for people. Libby's asking, can you give some examples of when perfectionism actually serves you? So... let's see, Simona's saying, it serves me because my business strategy clients can always count on my attention to detail in my deliverables. I love that. And I would have a similar one. I've taught Sacred Depths many, 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 many times. And even though I've taught it many, 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 many times, I still go back and refine the curriculum every time I teach it. It does take a little bit of time, and I've gotten faster over the years. But it's that perfectionism, and I'm not striving for it to be perfect necessarily, and that's why it's helpful. But that perfectionist tendency helps me keep the curriculum fresh and up to date with how I've evolved through the topics and what I learn from also each cohort and through my client work, and all of that. So I'd give that as an example. And it looks like there are some others in the chat. Kim is saying it's helpful when connected to striving for excellence in what I choose to master and focus on, and in my discernment for going deeper versus surface. I agree. Helpful with clarifying messages, especially in writing, marketing messages. Yep. Mindy's saying it can make me pay attention to details that others may not, but it can also lead me to get stuck in details. Yeah. Jessica's saying it helps me create at a level of excellence I like. It's unhelpful when it leaves me feeling bad about myself. Yeah, a lot of the similar theme on this. Amy Jo's saying it's super helpful when I get a job done. Mm-hmm. Better than satisfaction. Yeah. Yeah, good. Ron is saying, in the past, perfectionism served me and others well when doing due diligence. That's what due diligence is, a great moment for perfectionism on large multiple property development. Yep. Okay, let's go a little bit deeper. I'll do some journaling. I'm going to give you a phrase to start with, and then the invitation is just to free flow right for about a minute and a half. I'll let you know when. And just see if you can just keep on writing. See what more. This is kind of like a, I'll give the prompt and then don't. My invitation is, I mean, we're always thinking, but to try not to think it and just write and see what wants to come through. And so the first prompt, and I'll put it in the chat too, is being perfect will save me from dot dot dot. Being perfect will save me from. Take another 30 seconds. See what else wants to come through. Being perfect will save me from. Take a moment and finish up writing if you're still writing and already seeing some important pieces in the chat here. Being perfect will save me from judgment from my mom. Being perfect will save me from judgment and criticism, from being unloved and abandoned. There's a lot of beliefs that come along with perfectionism. We want to understand those for ourselves and for our clients. Jamie's saying, will save me from scrutiny and exposure, from being embarrassed, failing, looking like a fool, criticism and judgment, being wrong. Yep. Criticize from being criticized, rejected, or even being fired for not doing it right, ridicule, from feeling unpleasant emotions, from disappointing people. Yeah. From allowing myself to ask and receive help and support, from embarrassing myself, from being judged less than, yeah. Judgment, being less than, from being foolish, from being too much, yeah, from being talked about behind my back. So the perfectionism piece is never, it's never just a thing on its own. It almost always comes with a set of beliefs that maybe served us at some point. Or maybe serve us in some situations, but don't actually really serve us in most current situations. Let's do one more writing prompt. So this one is, and I'll also put it in the chat, my parents, and you don't have to use your parents for this. You can insert someone else if that feels better. My parents expected me to be perfect by, you know, whether they realized it or not, right? So my parents or someone else expected me to be perfect by dot, dot, dot. Another moment with that. Great. Pause here for a moment. There's some great shares in the chat, and I'd love to hear from one or two of you. What are you seeing so far? What feels important so far here? Who wants to raise their hand? You there, Kim?
Oh, sorry. I just looked at my, wait, where'd my hand go?
I usually put it down when I call.
that perfectionist thing was a lot of work to decondition, because once I finally saw that that's what I was doing in the way that I approached everything, it was really to just avoid the constant criticism in my head that I was hearing from the people that, like, it was just their voices. But also the ways in which my responses kept me in these cycles of doing more overworking and never feeling like anything that I did was good enough, because I was always attracting relationships that kept me in that cycle. And so it's been a lot of work to sort of stop those patterns. But I also have had some, like, it's not all bad, because there are aspects of it that make me really good at some of the work that I do. And people kind of have said things to me where they're like, you know, you're being too perfectionistic. And it's like, where I know it's not perfectionism is because I don't feel bad about what I'm doing. I feel like I'm taking an extra level of care or integrity, or I'm refining my process. I'm not being perfectionist. A big part of how I work is eliminating noise and eliminating things that don't make it easy. And you can't make things simpler if you don't have a certain level of excellence. So it's been a little bit, I have to push back on people who are like, you're being too perfectionistic. It's like, I know I'm not being perfectionist.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's why I'm saying it's like, is it helpful or unhelpful? Yeah. And a good way, I love how you're describing it, is kind of how you're feeling inside of you. And then another thing I would offer for everyone is the difference between being attached to perfection versus using the energy to carry you forward. The moment that we get attached to like what it means if we don't achieve that perfection is usually when we're not in that good place of feeling that you're talking about, Kim.
Yeah.
But when we use it as like an energetic inspiration without being attached, it can oftentimes be very helpful. And it's, as so many people said, help us move towards excellence.
It does keep showing up. Like right now I'm going through some visibility stuff and I keep interrupting myself in like, am I trying to make this good enough so that I won't, or am I, you know, putting it out there in the interest of curiosity and experimenting. And I just have to keep asking myself those questions to keep going with being more visible, especially online. Absolutely. So, yeah, I love this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mindy.
Hi. What's coming through for me, and I don't know if this is going to make any sense, but I feel like for me, perfectionism is completely mired in other, like what other people want and need and feel. And I can't extract the two. And it's really about pleasing everybody else, not myself.
I get chills when you say that. That feels true for me personally and in my body. I think that's such a, you know, we have these inquiries here in class, like for ourselves and also so that we can understand different client experiences. And I would say that's probably a very common client experience too.
And I think that's the first time that's occurred to me. That it wasn't about me. Well, in a weird way, it's not about me.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'm so glad that awareness is coming through.
Thanks.
Thank you. Rana.
Yeah, this is a big topic. And one of the things that I can't help but give some thought to, and even with the questions, is the difference between expectations and agreements. And how expectations are premeditated resentments. I love that statement so much. And
That's great.
I've been sitting with this a lot, both in the personal realm and in the business realm as well, and navigating those differences. And the similar to what Mindy just offered, you know, is that perfectionism mired in the expectations of others, but then also the expectations that I can put upon myself, you know, all those internal things as well. And similarly to what Kim offered, is this perfectionism, you know, that sense of, I look at it as like this sense of constant pressure, as opposed to, oh no, I'm really being curious here. I'm really navigating this. I'm really exploring this. I'm innovating. I'm being creative. I'm feeling inspired. I'm empathizing with myself and others. And that feels much gentler to me than the language of expectations. But I mean, by no means am I perfect at this. Because I also look at, well, you know, building a car, for example, like I want those brakes to freaking work and be perfect.
There are moments where for sure perfection is required and important. Usually not with humans, but sometimes even so, yes, for sure.
Yeah. Those are just some thoughts that I'm having. Thank you.
Yeah. No, thank you. And I love to think about the difference between expectation and agreement too.
I'm doing some deep work on that, and it's really, the difference is amazing.
Yeah. I can feel that energetically just in the way that you've presented it. Thank you. Okay. Oops, I pulled the wrong piece up here. Hold on a sec. So let's keep on going. Well, let me ask you this. No judgment, right, at all, just for awareness. Who in your life do you maybe expect perfection or near perfection from, maybe without ever even realizing it until this moment? Who are you holding to perfectionist standards? And again, to normalize it, I fall into this sometimes too, right? But get to be aware. Not, yep. Oftentimes our partners can get the brunt of it. That is for sure true in my life. John takes a lot. Leaders and mentors. I'm so glad you're bringing that in, Ray. It's so important for us to understand that as leaders ourselves, that that's going to be projected onto us. And also for us to see where we might be projecting that on to others. You know, like I say, at the beginning of this program and many programs, like I will often say, like, I am imperfect, right? So let's not project any, let's not idealize me or project that onto me, because it's not going to serve anybody. Lauren, you've been doing that with your mom since you moved in. Your employees. Yeah. Right. So it's just good for us to be aware where we're kind of putting that on someone else. Other just little piece I wanted to mention before we go deeper is that a subset of perfectionism is expecting that growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment is going to be neat and linear instead of messy and cyclical. I'll say that again. A subset of perfectionism is expecting that growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment or result is going to be neat and linear instead of messy and cyclical. So is that, does that show up for you as well? That's another myth right there, part of the myth, right? Yeah, I'll put that in the chat. That's just another, you know, as we're working with ourselves and our clients, we want to be looking for that as well. We could have a whole conversation just on that, but we won't right now. For now, I want to talk about the actual myth. So as you've heard me say many times, perfectionism is a myth. And I would actually call it a, it's interesting, I choose my words correctly. With our last cohort, I used this, which I always have. And some people got a little upset by it. So there might be another word to say, but I want to say perfectionism is a patriarchal myth. Or maybe we can call it a modern Western culture or capitalist myth. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. It's definitely cultural. I'll put it that way. So when I say myth, what do I mean? Well, for one thing, there's no such thing as a human being perfect. Human beings, newsflash, human beings cannot be perfect. It is not possible. for us to be perfect. Perfectionism is really only for the gods, or perfection, not perfectionism. Perfection is really only for the gods or for nature. Literally, when we step into perfectionism, we are stepping into a god complex. When we step into perfectionism, in a sense, we are stepping into a god complex, because we are thinking that we are something that we cannot be. Here's the other reason why perfection is a myth. Who exactly sets the standards for perfection? Who sets the standards? And how do those standards of perfection uphold societal power structures? What are we buying into when we buy into perfection? Does that make sense so far? So when we're stuck in the myth of perfection, that like perfection exists, that's the myth that we can be perfect, we're actually engaged in black or white thinking. When we're stuck in the myth of perfection, we're actually engaged in black or white thinking. And the way it kind of looks is this. There's only two, when we're in myth of perfection, there's only two things that exist in that moment: perfection or failure. Those are the only two things that exist in that moment. And usually when we're stuck in that myth of perfection, we're ping-ponging between the two. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. And then you're not. Oh my God, I'm such a failure. I'm the worst. I suck. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. And then that never happens because that's not possible for us. Oh my gosh, I suck and I'm a failure and that's the worst, right? And that's what happens internally with this myth. There's no, when we're in the myth and that black and white thinking, there's no middle ground. And I don't mean mediocre when I say middle ground between perfection and failure. I mean, there's not, we forget what exists in the middle, but the middle is actually where real life is. This is where reality is. It's where the gold of our lives are. All right, let me pause there. What's feeling important here? What are you seeing? Let's see what's happening in the chat. Generational conditioning. Yes. Yeah, one of the toughest things to unlearn, that life is messy and complicated. Yeah. I'd love to hear one of your voices. What's coming together here? And let me know if this black and white with the perfection and failure makes sense in that ping pong game. Perfectionism being a god complex is an aha moment. Good. Rana.
So I can't help but also think, when I heard you mention the word, what standards are we buying into? I also ask, or can't help but ask myself, what have we actually been conditioned and manipulated and coerced in to, rather than actually, you know, having that free choice to buy in to a set of particular standards.
Yeah.
And unhooking from that patriarchal, capitalistic, unchecked, unaccountable capitalism is what I'm referring to. And the lingering effects of colonization as well.
Agree. And I think it's so important for us to poke holes in those standards and in mm-hmm. what we've taken as truth.
Mm-hmm.
that may not be for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Amy Jo.
So I'm finding myself in a loop, I think, about wanting things to be great, right? Really having like the differentiation between being overly perfect with things and actually having a desire for greatness. And I wonder if you could speak to that, because I'm having trouble kind of differentiating it. And this is coming from in my life as an, you know, a way to apply it in my life. My son and my partner used to always say to me, they don't so much anymore, but they used to always say to me, well, it's never good enough for you. And I would say, well, it's not that it's not good enough. It's just that I know that we can do it better. I know that there's potential for something even better than what we have right now. So I wonder if you could speak to that, because I'm really caught in a loop with it.
Yeah. Well, so first, just as I'm listening to you, I'm hearing that, and tell me if I'm getting this right, for you, the difference between perfectionism and striving for greatness is that the striving for greatness isn't that it has to be perfect. It's just the understanding that there's more potential. Yeah. There's a next place to get to. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you say you're stuck in the loop, explain a little bit more what you mean by that. What's the loop?
I think it's maybe like a loop of justifying myself for wanting more and wondering, you know, even in a judgment loop of like, is that okay? Is that perfectionism? Do I need to rein back on that? Or is it okay to just be okay with that? I know the answer.
Okay, good. What's the answer?
That's what the loop is. I mean, I feel like the answer is that, you know, we're here for striving to create what we desire in our lives. That's the point in my perception of it. And so, of course, it's okay. And I think it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the call around, you know, your definitions of what it is, and really like, I guess, allowing space for development without it holding you back from actually doing what you need to do in your life.
Yeah. And so along those lines, you know, what I would ask you is, for you, what does it look like in that striving when it crosses the line between helpful and unhelpful? You know that the striving has gone into the unhelpful zone.
Yeah, it looks like procrastination of like really just stalling out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that helpful to kind of think about each of these pieces? Good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So let's keep on going. Quickie question to think about for a moment. Where in your life are you engaged in binary thinking? Where there's binary thinking, there's oftentimes a perfection tinge in there, as we saw. So I'm either rich or poor. I'm either totally beautiful and sexy, or I'm gross and disgusting. I'm a success, or I'm a failure. I've got spaciousness, or I have no time at all. I'm healthy, or I'm sick. I'm an amazing practitioner, or I'm the worst practitioner. Where are you engaging in some binary thinking? Yeah, Stacy's saying I'm all in working on my business, or I'm totally checked out. I'm being productive or not being productive at all. So even if we just start applying those, do you see how it's so easy to be in that ping pong game? And then that's when it's not helpful, right? Because if the thinking is either I'm totally productive or I'm not productive, or I need to be all in my business, or else I'm not in my business at all, we just, then we don't get to engage in real life and take the actions that we want to take towards the more ideal or the more optimized or the goal or whatever it is. Not to mention, it doesn't feel very good to be in it, right? Okay. So we've got now the kind of the, hopefully the understanding, some foundational principles about how perfection works, et cetera. So then the next question is, so then how can we work with the myth of perfection with our clients and ourselves? How can we work with this with our clients? So a couple of things that I want us to be thinking about. So the first is an energetics piece. Check your own perfectionism filters. The more that you can check your own perfectionism, the easier it's going to be to hold space for your clients to undo their myths, right? Because energy follows energy. So if there are any places where you're expecting perfection of your client or something they're working on or the way their process should look, et cetera, right? You want to check that and call yourself out on that. Sometimes, because energy follows energy, sometimes if we haven't checked our perfectionism filters, we can fall into our client's perfectionist thinking. Like our energy goes with their energy on that, right? Like it needed to look that way. And then we don't even question like, well, did it? Or yeah, this process is supposed to be messy, or, you know, whatever it is, right? What's the standard there, et cetera. So just on that energetic level, we do want to be aware of that for ourselves. Usually, not always, and again, these are different mix and match tools to be thinking about. We want to support our client, create awareness around where they've fallen into the myth of perfection. Some point in the process, we're going to want to create awareness, oftentimes more than once. So you want to use all of your creating awareness tools that we've learned here. So you can use reflecting is one of our creating awareness tools. That might look like, my sense is that your perfectionist is showing up a bit right now, right? You can reflect that back to them if we're seeing and sensing it. We can reflect a hard truth. So for example, I notice that sometimes when you feel under pressure, your perfectionism kicks up. Is that something that you notice too? Remember, consulting is one of the creating awareness tools. Sometimes we might use consulting for perfectionism. From my experience, I've seen that that's an unrealistic expectation to fill a program with 10 people in 2 weeks. And of course, our questioning skills help us create awareness as well. So here are just some examples. Always coach the what based on the who. But if you're working with a client and you sense that they're applying myth of perfection or looking through that lens, you might ask, for example, how hard are you being on yourself right now? Or you might ask them a question if you know they don't project perfectionism onto their kid or onto a friend or whatever. You know, what would you expect, or their clients, right? What would you expect of X here? What would you expect of your kid here? You know, whatever it is, your client here. Another creating awareness question for perfectionism. What would be acceptable if it didn't have to be absolutely perfect? What would be acceptable if it didn't have to be absolutely perfect? Sometimes I might kind of in a light, if I see someone is like employing perfectionist thinking, I might in a lighthearted way ask, what would perfectionism look like here? Helps kind of create awareness that that's what they're doing. Another powerful way that you can support a client, like to create awareness around the perfectionism that they're using, is to ask them to make two columns on a piece of paper, or you can do this verbally as well. And one column is ideal and perfect. What would this scenario look like if it was perfect? And then what would this scenario look like if it was truly good enough? Or if you really want to bring the point home, column one is what is perfect and unrealistic? And column two is what is truly good enough. Or I don't want to complicate things, but just to say, you could also have three columns. Truly good enough is one, ideal is another, perfect and unrealistic is the third. So for example, if I'm working on a client, about their client work, and I would ask them to do this, maybe truly good enough is your clients feel seen, heard, and loved by you. They're learning how to access their own inner wisdom. They're moving forward on some of their goals. That's truly good enough. Maybe ideal is you're knocking most of your sessions out of the park. There's real deep learning and evolution that is happening, even if resistance is experienced and creative solutions are coming to the fore. And then maybe perfect and unrealistic is every single session without fail is knocking it out of the park, right? In my mind, I sometimes think I need to go there, right? Every single session is knocking it out of the park. You're bringing your clients to their knees every single time. They don't have resistance. They're just like, right? They're killing it all the time, always, right? And so these columns is a great cognitive exercise to support back to our rewiring negative thinking, to support the truth from the story, like what's story here and what's real, and to really see that perfectionist thinking. You can ask a client, what's the binary thinking that you're applying to this situation? Particularly if you've spoken about binary thinking before, you know that that's already in their lexicon, or else you might explain it first. What's the binary thinking that you're applying to this situation? Sometimes even who or what culture's standards does this reflect? All right, there's a lot more for us to look at, but I know I just shared a mouthful on creating awareness. So let's pause here. I'd love to hear from one or two of you, what's sparking for you here? What's coming together? What are you learning? What's feeling important? Or what questions do you have? Yeah, the columns exercise can be really helpful. Anyone want to share voice to voice? Any questions or what you're seeing? Kim?
I realize that I tend to take that Goldilocks approach to just about everything because it opens up the conversation and gets them in that like exploring curious place and less in this. But I think it's also because I tend to take the approach of like both and something else. And that's kind of been developing, but it's been really helpful to see that if you can just get them curious, then it doesn't necessarily create some of the roadblocks that just come up no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. That curiosity and questions like these can pique the curiosity. I love that you've been doing that already and intuitively. That's great. Mindy.
Sorry. It just popped into my head. I was just thinking about this, how early on that this is driven into us. And what popped into my head is, you know, being in kindergarten and being told to draw on the lines, that it was so important. I'm sorry, I know this is a simple thing, but just from the very earliest age of being told I had to draw on the lines.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of says it all right there.
Yeah,
for everybody.
Absolutely. And it means that there's something wrong with you if you're not drawing in the lines and all of that, you know. And I'll just say also, I mean, I've been aware of this and I've been teaching this for years, and I still catch myself sometimes with my kids applying perfection. You know, it can be so deeply embedded, and our kids just take it in, like they take it in. This stuff goes back and the drawing in the lines for sure. Libby.
This flows off of that, because I had a unusual experience in my upbringing with my parents, because I was neglected in a way that, like, completely ignored, non-existent kind of thing. But the upside to that is that I didn't have expectations or standards or like that kind of thing put on me from my parents. Like, I have no recollection of them ever saying, this isn't good enough, try to do better, nothing like that. Now, I did get some of that from religion, but that's a different story. But what happened is I stood in as my own surrogate parent. And so I learned to put the standards and the driving and the whipping boy on myself. And so I bring that up because, I don't know, I haven't met another person who has that experience, but also it would be there no matter what. Even if our parents did it perfect, we show up with it somehow. It's in the air, it's in the collective. And
I think it's true. It's in the air, the collective, the culture. And who knows? I mean, there may be even scientific research that it's there may be something to that as well. But thank you for sharing your experience, just to see you in it, and also to remind us that our clients will have many different experiences, and that could possibly be one of them too. Thank you. Giuseppe.
I was muted, sorry. No, I just wanted to say that the three column exercise is amazing, because I was thinking that, I mean, if you ask what perfection looks like, what's the perfect scenario, it's impossible to say what's perfect. You can always think of a way to make it better.
Yeah.
And I think this is the proof that
part of the myth.
Perfection doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true. And you know, what part of what I'm hearing in what you're saying, which is a new thought for me, is that oftentimes when we're stuck in the myth of perfection, it's like, even if we achieve what we thought that perfection is going to be, if we're in that myth, we're going to make up the next thing. We didn't get there yet, and we're going to make up the next thing, and we're going to make up the next thing. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Let's keep on going. So another tool that we can use with myth of perfection is, I said it earlier, letting our clients know that we are imperfect. modeling imperfection. And I'm just going to like get on my soapbox here for one moment, because there's still a lot that we have to look at. But, you know, one of my things that I call out about this industry, coaching and transformational industry, that I love so much, is that too many leaders put themselves on pedestals or don't acknowledge their own imperfections. And when leaders don't acknowledge their own imperfections, it is really damaging to those that they serve and support, because it sets up, it reinforces the myth. And then when the client doesn't achieve that perfection, there's even more shame. They think even more that there's something wrong for them, because look, you know, all of these coaches out there saying they're making $1 million in a day, or they never hit a roadblock when it comes to X, Y, or Z, or they're never scared to get up in front of, you know, whatever, they never have a terrible, you know, session or whatever it is. And so we want to model, it's not that we want to model imperfection, but we want to model our humanity, and we want to model owning our imperfection and model being at peace with not being perfect. Does that make sense? Imagine if more parents did that. What impact that would have on young children. Okay, another tool when we're working with myth of perfection is that we can support our clients to connect with their perfectionist, their inner perfectionist, as an archetype, and then dialogue with that perfectionist. And we can do it very much as a, like a befriend your fear process. So we can do this in a couple of ways. We can befriend the perfectionist itself. We can do it through a somatic process, or even in conversation, find out why it's there, what its purpose is, what its higher wisdom is, you know, all those different pieces. We could do a BYF with a fear that is associated with the perfectionist, like I'll be abandoned, like some of you shared, I'll be abandoned if I'm not perfect, I'll be criticized if I'm not perfect, et cetera. So we can work to like pinpoint what's a fear, and then do a befriend your fear process with the fear itself. Any of the journaling questions that I asked you in the first half of our class today, are a version of befriending, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, where is your perfectionist at? How is it helpful? How is it not helpful? Where did it come, right? So we can ask any of those questions. We can journal from the voice of our perfectionist. I like to do that like for self-work, because sometimes it's harder to hold a visualization or a somatic process for yourself. So, you know, in my self work, I'm always journaling with my archetypes. And this is one that I come to a lot. It's like, let me connect in with my perfectionist. What is my perfectionist saying here? All of these things that I just mentioned are all versions of making friends with the perfectionist or with the fear. And just as a reminder, that befriend process, whether it's with an archetype, whether it's with a fear, whether it's with a negative thought, one of the things that it does is it brings it out of the blind spot. So that a client can, number one, see it more clearly. Number two, so that a client can see that it's not all of them, it's just one part of them. Because sometimes when it's the blind spot, we just think it's all of us, it's all of who we are. And then in that pulling it out of the blind spot, it gives the client more spaciousness to see other possibilities or other ways of being. You can also do any of what the rewiring that we looked at. You can use the rewiring process, tracking, right? So you can ask a client to track their perfectionist, the ways that we did with rewiring. You can do a visualization, personify either the perfectionist itself or the thought around the perfectionism. I will share with you, we have a few weeks until our next session. So beginning of next week, I will share with you a recording that's specifically a dialogue with your perfectionist if you want to go deeper with it or use that with clients. All right. We've still got more, but I'm going to pause here. Any thoughts or questions on this, using BYF, negative thought patterns, any of that? Good? Okay. Okay. I have three more things I want to share. And the next one is kind of a big one that I'm going to lightly touch on, because I think it's important to lightly touch on it. There's so much deeper we can go with it. It's about shadow, in advanced depth, we go much deeper in it, but I think it's good to be aware of, just as we go through today's module. So quick explanation of shadow. It kind of defies a quick explanation, but for our purposes today, when we put a part of ourselves in shadow, which essentially means when we've decided that a part of ourselves is wrong or bad or unsavory, or we don't want it, or we've judged it, et cetera. When we put a part of ourselves in shadow and we've disenfranchised ourselves from it, usually one of two things happens. It wants to be seen, right? All parts of ourselves want to be seen. They want to be honored. They want to be valued. And so if we put a part of ourselves in shadow, because that part of ourself wants to be seen or honored or valued, one of two things happens. It either shows up in a hyper, hyper, hyper way, or it shows up in a suppressed way, like two poles of the same thing. So oftentimes what can happen with perfectionism is, and so far we've been speaking about mostly the hyper, you know, we become hyper perfectionists. Like we have to get it so right or else, you know, all the things, but oftentimes we can go to the exact opposite pole, which is the suppressed perfectionist, which might show up as the sloth, the lazy one, the like hyper mistake maker, the sloppy one. Does this make sense what I'm saying so far? I'm kind of going through it quick. Sometimes we show up as, I need to get it perfect. I need to get it perfect. I need to get it perfect. But other times it can show up as almost like the exact opposite of it. Simona.
That's funny. That is resonating with me, but I actually had a different meaning immediately when you talked about suppressing that I wanted to share in the space, which was I've done this myself, and I'm going through this right now with my sister-in-law. So she doesn't see herself as selfish because she's put that in a shadow. So she leaks stuff all over the family all the time because she's so unwilling to see that part of herself. So it's not like she's extra selfish or not selfish. It's just that she's not acknowledging her needs to be selfish, like part of the human spectrum. And so she just leaks all over the place.
So yeah, 100%. And that's another subset of shadow, but because we're not doing like a full shadow training, but yes, 100%. Yeah. So for our purposes today, I want to give some of like the background behind it, but the whole description I just gave is basically to say, if you have a client that's showing up, you know, this is not how they normally are, but they're showing up as the sloth or the lazy one, or the messy one, or the sloppy one, or the negligent one, it may be an indicator that working with perfectionism can be really supportive of them. Does that make sense? Just let me know if that makes sense. Yes, no, maybe so.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I guess I'm trying to understand. So I understand that it could be like the opposite of what we usually see, but how do you know it's just someone isn't being, that it's not suppressed perfectionism? Because I think that looks to me like that there could be something else as well.
Absolutely. And so that's why we always want to explore and not come in with, it's definitely this. We want to ask questions, you know, all of our questions, we want to create awareness, but I share it to say that it's because it's part of that black and white thinking. It's actually a similar kind of concept of oftentimes if they're in the myth, because it's so painful to think about, like, I can never get here, then it's almost like they're relegated to making mistakes when they don't mean to, or things taking much slower than they need to. And so it could be an indication, and you may want to ask a question about perfectionism, you know, a creating awareness question around perfectionism to try to like test out, is that an avenue that we can go down? There are specific ways, which we won't go into this program, to head on work with shadows. But I'm just bringing it up to say, like, if that shows up, you could bring some of these perfectionist tools in if that applies to the who of the person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess for me though, when I never thought of it that way, because what I'm thinking is, oh, it sounds like sabotage to me.
Well, exactly. It could be sabotage because of the pressure of perfectionism. That's exactly
okay. Right. I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's a great clarification. Simona.
I think I'm almost there. But so if I'm getting this right, we brought in shadow just to touch on it very briefly so that we can know that there is the hyper-perfectionism, which we were just talking about, like the 12, right? And then that can show up in other ways on the flip side. So if we see someone who's not achieving their goals, to Mindy's point, if it's sabotage, there's just a lot of questions. And one of the things we might think is this is an expression, a shadow expression of perfectionism and using these same tools. It's just, so am I getting that right?
We're getting it. Okay. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It could be an indicator to go in that direction. You want to do a little exploration first. Okay. And then if it is true, even if it's not attached to perfectionism, but whether it is or not, you can do a befriend your fear with any one of those archetypes, with the slacker, with the lazy one, with the sloppy one. So you've got tools to work with. Okay. So two more pieces or things to think about when working with perfection or myth of perfection. And this is kind of like a I guess, another energetic piece to bring in for you and your client. You could bring in a growth mindset. So oftentimes when we're stuck in the myth of perfection, we forget that the road to success is always under construction. Sometimes as a part of that, oftentimes when we're in the myth of perfection, we've also fallen into the myth of arrival, which is the exact opposite of a growth mindset. So myth of arrival is that once I get here, you know, then I'll be perfect and everything will be great and it'll be done and I'll have arrived and I don't have to worry about anything anymore. So sometimes that can be a help. It can be helpful to create awareness around that, rewire beliefs around that, et cetera. You know, whatever you'll see, like what kind of tools you want to use there. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. All right, so one of my favorite myth of perfection tools, it's one of my go-tos, and I love clients, just most people really take to this. It's a great tool to help move yourself or move others out of binary thinking. It's a great tool to support growth mindset. Is the even though nevertheless exercise. So even though nevertheless is a way of honoring what is, while also seeing that, how do I want to put it? It's a way of honoring what is, while also seeing that things aren't just failure, perfect or failure. So let me give you an example. Let's say, so this is a personal example. I tend to fall into perfectionist thinking with Penina, my oldest daughter, because that is a tough situation and it brings up a lot for me. And I've got an amazing but tough daughter. And sometimes in that relationship, I get worried that when I go into perfectionist thinking, I'm like, oh my God, she's going to be unhappy as an adult. Like it's a done deal, you know, like I've messed her up and it's just all bad from here. And her and I are never going to be friends and like all the things. Right. So here's how, I might use the even though nevertheless tool with that perfectionist thinking. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, this is honoring what is. This is the truth. We butt heads a lot. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she shares and opens up with me and she calls on me when she's in need. Do you see how it takes it out of the black and white thinking? And it like, yes, it is true. We butt heads. But also this other thing is true at the same time. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she's slowly learning that the rules in this house are here to keep her safe. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she's strong. She's a strong and confident young woman who isn't afraid to speak her mind, right? Like remembering the positive of that. So if you noticed, I started all three of those statements with the same thing. Like I'm working on the same thing consistently, but then each nevertheless, I'm finding another piece of evidence to throw me out of myth of perfection or binary thinking there. And this can work well if you just have a client do three of them, but I recommend doing 5 to 10. All of them starting with the same, even though Penina and I butt heads, right? And then a different nevertheless each time. So the even though part of the statement, again, it honors the truth of what is, it's being truthful about maybe what's not working. It doesn't deny the situation. The nevertheless portion of the statement takes it out of the failure zone and into looking at possibility, or into looking at how, into that middle, right? That middle spot that we tend to skip over when we're doing the ping pong. Let me pause here. Any questions on the exercise? And the reason why I'm asking is we're going to do a 5-day, even though nevertheless challenge, if you want to, as a group. It's a great way to do rewiring as well. So I'll give instructions on that in a moment, but what are you seeing and hearing around this exercise? What is it sparking for you? Or what questions do you have on it? Good, Ray. I'm glad that someone's going to do 5-day. Yeah, Jessica's saying the exercise opens up the space for nuance, which is the opposite of black and white thinking. Yes. Rebecca's asking, how do you bring this exercise up in a session as pre-session work or homework or during a client session? It's a great question. So any of the above. I haven't done it as a pre-session, though if you've already talked about it before, that could work. But I will bring it up in session itself, and I might go through a couple with the client. And then always to back it up, I'll give it to them as homework as well. If you've got more cues on that, Rebecca, let me know. You're nervous. Mindy's saying, I think this takes the shame out of the thoughts. I love that reflection. Amy Jo.
I really love what Mindy just wrote too about the shame. So I've been exploring the concept of toxic positivity, which I feel like is rampant in our community as coaches. And I wonder if there's a way to address, like a phrasing or way to address this with the client so that they don't go into that toxic positivity, but just like allowing the reality to be there. And there's also other realities that can be good. Do you have a way of addressing that?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So, I mean, for me, I would take the time, and I have taken the time to explain a little bit what toxic positivity is. Like sometimes you need to consult for a few minutes and then ask the client if it resonates for them or what it brings up for them or, you know, how they see it. And then from there, you know, then that just opens the pathway to be able to say, like, so this isn't about, you know, only seeing unrealistic, you know, positive things. It's about really honoring what is, while also not closing off incredible opportunities or possibilities or ways of thinking.
Great.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good question. Libby, did you want to share something?
Yeah, it reminds me of the logical refuting that I do with the clients, because it hits on that belief system. You get to that core belief and you're using your logic and looking for evidence in your life to prove against that, because that thought is what, combined with the emotion, and it's great.
Yeah, 100%. It is finding evidence, because again, like when we're stuck in it, our mind is not looking for evidence of otherwise, right? So
yeah,
this exercise helps to do it. And then to move it beyond the cognitive, you can then, so the writing it out is the cognitive, but then reading it over, taking the statement into your body, feeling that even though nevertheless can bring it to some of the other levels of learning and processing.
Yes, an important part of the pruning process, which also guards against toxic positivity, because you're not just layering on these positive thoughts, you're actually pruning out the old.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that term, pruning. That's great. Okay, so first is just to say, with all the tools we've looked at today, feel free to mix and match them, right? For me, as I've said many times, there's not one way. I'm giving you lots of different tools and perspectives so that you can mix and match them when you're working with clients. We'll do a 5-day challenge starting tomorrow with the even though nevertheless. Optional if you want to participate. I'll be sending an email out to you every day for 5 days. The invitation is going to be to do 5 to 10, even though neverthelesses. You can stick with the same. So each day it needs to be the same topic. I want to recommend trying to stick with the same topic for all 5 days, but that may not always be aligned. So if that shifts for you, go with what feels right. And then the invitation is to write out 5 to 10 and then take them in also afterwards, like I was just sharing with Libby. Don't apply any myth of perfection to this 5-day challenge. If you miss a day or more than one day, or don't hop into day 4, it's all good. And you know, just do like 5 days after that, or whatever it is. We're not applying any myth of perfection to this. This is the reason why we're doing this is for a couple of reasons. Number one, for you. Right. Number two, so you can see what it's like when you ask a client to do this kind of exercise for homework. Number three, the 5 days is a little bit practicing some rewiring in there, you know, some deeper rewiring in there as well. So you'll get the emails. For those of you that are on Facebook, if you want to share your even though neverthelesses or what's coming through or difficulties or whatever, please share there. If you want to email me, if you're not on Facebook, you can as well. But that way we can, you know, we'll do it together. You'll also get some other homework sheets. I told you, you'll get that recording of the to dialogue with the perfectionist. You'll get that next week. If you're working with a coaching partner in the program, in your next session, whatever, you know, again, it's hard to manufacture some of these things, but if it makes sense, whatever your partner brings up, see if you can look through the obstacle, whatever they bring up through the myth of perfection lens, and then use some of the tools that we looked at today. So we are at time. I'm happy to hang on if anybody has any last questions or anything that you want to share. But if not, we're complete for today, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Joanna, I have a quick question.
Yeah.
The even though nevertheless, when we're doing that with the client, they would come up with the nevertheless, correct? Versus us having them.
Exactly. You know, every now and again, I might, it can be helpful to give an example just to sort of activate things a bit. If a client is having a little trouble at first, you could give an example. So that's absolutely fine to do. But in general, the client is the one that's coming up with the statement.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, anyone else need anything? Have a great rest of your day. I'll see you all soon.
Joanna, I put a little note in the chat.
Okay, I'll go take a look at it right now. Thanks for flagging that up, Ray.